and welcome to the EdTech podcast and this fourth edition of the Hackney episode. It's been an amazing short week since the podcast started, and I wanted to say a big thank you for your support. We've had 400 downloads from 9 countries in 1 week since launch, and I hope to keep bringing you interesting stories from around the globe. Yet to be edited, but coming up on the podcast, the latest cohort of EdTech startups from Emerge Education, Lauriston Primary School teacher Tolu Oyinola, Assistant Director User Experience at Loughborough University Graham Walton, Global Teacher Award finalist Joe Fathery, and MFL Twitterati godfather Joe Dale. But now, in this edition, I meet Alex Flowers, Head of Digital Programmes at the Victoria and Albert Museum, and we chat V&A East, Wearable Technology, Teaching Resources for Computer and STEM via the Arts, the Coding Language Processing, St Martin's University, Iterative Design, and why arts in the curriculum must be protected, and the usual. Follow us on Twitter at Podcast EdTech, Instagram and Facebook, and email at theedtechpodcast@gmail.com. I'm just enjoying a cup of ginger tea in the V&A cafe with its delightful interior architecture here. And I'm about to meet Alex Flowers, the head of digital programs at the Victoria and Albert Museum, to find out a little bit more about their involvement in the Olympicopolis project in the Olympic Park. Well, thank you very much, Alex, for taking part in the podcast. Would you mind kicking off just by introducing yourself and saying a little bit about what you do here at the Victoria and Albert Museum?
Sure. So I am team leader for digital programs here, and we're based in a department called Learning and Interpretation. So we do all the education work of the museum, and we also do the in-gallery interpretations. That might be labels, or it might be interactives inside the galleries. So within my team, there's 4 of us inside our team for digital programs, and we look at digital art and design right across all the collections here.
So in terms of school, what does that mean with regards to how you interact with schools and students themselves?
So we tend to mainly work with, I guess when we say young people, so 16 and upwards, with higher education and with adult learners as well. But one of our roles within the department is to support our schools teams, who create all the sessions around the exhibitions and around the permanent collections that we have. And so we kind of act as an advisory body for them, so they can bounce ideas off us. So if they're looking to integrate, I don't know, mobile technology inside their sessions, we can come in, we can talk to them about how it might best work with students, how they can time the session, arrange the session to make the most of the technology, and sort of point them in the right direction for interesting bits of software or apps or approaches they can take.
Okay. And does that also play into actually getting resources into the school that are part of the museum, or less so?
It can do. So we do outreach sessions. So we have sort of museum in the box type things that we can take out. But I guess a big part of reaching out to schools is some of the online work that we do. So creating teachers' resources, activities for students, or online resources on our website that schools and teachers can access.
Okay. Obviously, with it being half term this week, did you ever just get a bit sick of children? Or is that a terrible...
I'm never going to say that I get sick of them.
We'll edit that bit out.
I mean, we tend to get up to about 3,000 people coming to take part in our activities. So this week we're doing some green screen photography, where you can put yourself into a Botticelli painting, so you can be Venus being born from the sea, or you can be dancing in the Primavera painting. And it's very busy, it can be tiring, and a lot of our work kind of revolves around crowd management when it does get like that. But it's always interesting, you know, and if we engage children now when they're out with their families, you know, we hope that they'll have a good impression of museums and the V&A especially, you know, and they'll come back and they'll make it part of their cultural life.
Fair enough. Generous answer. I suppose moving on to Hackney, I mean, I thought the V&A was very much based in Kensington. So what's the connection to Hackney? We're looking obviously at how Hackney's collaborating with local tech initiatives. So can you expand on that a little bit?
Sure. So a big initiative for the Olympic Park is to build V&A East, or E20, V&A E20. The name is still completely yet to be decided.
What's your favourite?
I quite like V&A East. I think that's quite nice. I think that gives, you know, an identity to it, and will hopefully make it feel a bit more part of the landscape, a bit more part of the community out there. I mean, what we don't want to do is just parachute in this giant spaceship of a museum and just lands, and it have no connection to what's happening around it.
Yeah.
And it is a unique part of London, and it has a unique identity, one which is very distinct to South Kensington, where sort of the mother museum is, if you like. But East London is where a lot of the interesting creative activity is happening inside the city at the moment. There's large artist communities, there's places like Hackney Wick, which is the world's heaviest concentration of artist studios, I think, which is pretty amazing, considering where it is.
Vogue said it was the cultural centre of the universe.
Wow. that's quite a quote. Well, hopefully, you know, if the V&A becomes part of that, cultural centre of the universe, that would be fantastic. So it's a chance for the V&A to not reinvent itself, but to create a museum that fits the 21st century. Where we are at the moment is very much a Victorian institution in many ways, the architecture, the way it's laid out, the kind of collections that are here in part. And so we want to create a place which is, you know, dynamic, which is contemporary, which is engaging with current issues in design and art and in sort of the wider social sphere as well. And being in East London is going to be a big part of that. So at the moment we're doing a lot of research and working with local communities, schools, with some of the sort of HE colleges in the area to try and figure out how we can work with them and start building those relationships now so that in 5-6 years' time, when we do start to open, when the momentum builds up, you know, we've got this great foundation in place and, you know, we're already engaged with those who are around us.
And when you're having those conversations with local stakeholders, including schools, you know, what kind of ideas are coming out, or what are their needs where, you know, the V&A may be able to help work with them?
So I think one of the big bonuses of being on that side of the city is that it's going to be much easier for people to actually come and visit the physical museum. And we've done lots of projects over in sort of Stratford Way before, and it was quite amazing, but perhaps not so surprising to find out that a lot of people had never travelled across the city or had never really ventured out of the borough so much. And for schools and for colleges, it can be really difficult to take a class out and to arrange cover and to convince the heads of your institution that, you know, this is a valuable thing, that this is an important experience that you should be giving your students. So anything that we can do to make that easier is only going to benefit the schools and colleges that are around us.
And I think you've been in the role for 4 years.
Yes,
that's right. Is there a particular case you can think of where you've worked really well with schools, or, you know, that you are particularly proud of that's kind of stuck with you?
Sure. So last year we did a great project which involved the Queen Elizabeth Olympic Park.
It's a bit of a mouthful.
It is a little bit. I was thinking of the acronym QUP, that'll be it. St. Martin's University, and we looked at creating sort of wearable technology and set up a competition for schools to enter where they could bring their ideas and concepts around what wearable technology might look like in the future, how it might function, how it might affect our lives. And then teamed up the winning schools with mentors from St. Martin's University to actually realise those pieces. And that all culminated in a great show at the Aquatic Centre in the Olympic Park, where we set up a catwalk, we had models in, photographers, beautiful lighting, the stage, made a real event of it. And that was a real deep engagement. So that project ran for about 6 months or so, and for 3 of those months, the schools were working with young students from St. Martin's, people who are incredibly skilled at what they do. They were MA students, so some of them already had industry experience, great designers, knew a lot about new material technology, interesting trends, and they worked very closely, the students there.
And where were the students who were learning from? Were they from a school or from a college? Or
So they were all from secondary schools, so it was key stages, I think it's 4 and 5 that we were working with. And those schools were from all over London, but we made sure that we got a good geographic pick from each corner of the city.
Okay.
So yeah, East London was well represented in that.
It just made me think. I remember the Science Museum launched, or George Osborne was there launching one of his STEM initiatives. So to what extent does the V&A collaborate or corroborate in terms of curriculum? Or, I mean, I know that STEM is a massive focus for the government. Is that, how do you work with government in terms of the education programmes that you deliver as well?
Well, all of our school programmes do link, have very explicit links to the curriculum and supports a wide range of subjects. So, I mean, we look at maths, even through Islamic arts and architecture and studying geometry. We look at design technology through lots of different parts of our collections. And we do look at the computing curriculum as well, but always through the lens of art and design, because obviously that's what we have here. And so we can dip into things like the computing curriculum really nicely through our collection of computer art that we have. We've been collecting since 1960s, so we have stuff from NASA's Rocket Labs when they had artists in residence in the 70s, lots of work on paper and lots of purely digital work as well. And so we can look at those, the students can come in, talk with the curators, think about how they're made, get an explanation of kind of process behind it. And then we work with a coding language called Processing, which is quite a simple language to pick up, but one that's quite widely used by visual artists and interactive artists. And
that's called Processing.
Processing, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Is that free or is that...
It is free. Okay. Yeah. It's all free and open source.
Okay, great.
And start looking at creating generative artworks, sharing codes, sort of remixing each other's code, but always focusing back to sort of the original objects, original art pieces that we were looking at.
Is there anything else that you want to get out there for educators that might be listening?
One of the things that the challenges that we all always have, or especially are having over sort of the current year and the last couple of years, is really making sure that art sticks in the curriculum and it stays in there and it isn't excluded by sort of the STEM concentration that's happening. And, you know, there's lots of talk about STEAM, including the arts in that. And I think looking at engineering, looking at technology and looking at science, design is such a huge part of that, and understanding design thinking and iteration and elegance and about the user experience, including design in that, is incredibly important. Otherwise, what, you're going to be left with some kind of soulless
Roboton.
Yes, if you like. So, I mean, we campaign for that. We do speak to government about this. And I hope we try and sort of lead by example as well and show good examples of teaching and run interesting sessions for teachers as well and show them the kind of possibilities that are out there.
Okay, and then how can people keep in touch with what you're doing and you in particular in the V&A and V&A East as well?
Sure. So, I mean, the V&A website's a great place to start, vam.ac.uk. We have a great selection of teachers' resources on the tests resource section. And all our sessions are listed on the site. We run lots of free workshops, so if you want to bring in your primary school, secondary school, there's no charge for those, and we can help support you organise it and make sure that it's as painless as possible to bring all your students in. We know it's tricky for teachers, so we do want to make that as easy as possible.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much, Alex. I really appreciate that.
Great. Thanks, Sophie.
And if you enjoyed that, make sure you subscribe to the EdTech podcast on iTunes. Thanks for listening and see you next time.